Welcome back to the PED Space. Palette Life Sciences, sponsor of this podcast, is committed to bringing educational tools such as the PED Space for sharing best practices and compelling conversations across a wide variety of pediatric urology and VUR topics. The content of today's episode is solely the opinion of Dr. Barry Duell, board-certified pediatric urologist at Cardinal Glennon Children's Hospital and professor in the Department of Surgery at St. Louis University School of Medicine. In this episode, Dr. Duell will discuss physician burnout in urology. He will explain the signs and causes of burnout, how it's measured, and define interventions for alleviation and prevention. And now, here is Dr. Duell.
Hey, everybody. This is Barry Duell, talking about something that's not really specifically urological, although very relevant to urologists, including pediatric urologists. I'm going to talk about physician burnout today. So we're going to talk about what burnout is, what we do to diagnose it, if you will, and what we can do to treat it to help the problem out. So to start off, this has become a big buzzword, physician burnout. Everybody talks about it. It's discussed at the AUA meetings every year. It's something that comes up really in all the specialty meetings as a residency program director. It's something that the ACGME is definitely paying attention to. So it's important to all of us. First of all, physician burnout is on the rise. And unfortunately, we're finding out that urology has one of the highest rates of any specialty. Residents are among the highest at risk, but also practicing urologists have a very high risk. In fact, there's one survey that showed between 2011 and 2014, so just over a few years, burnout, self-reported burnout increased from 41% to 64%. That's among practicing urologists. And unfortunately, this was the largest increase for any specialty. So why is this happening? There are a lot of factors. The most common factor is too many bureaucratic tasks. Paperwork, EMRs, some other problems that contribute to burnout, increase in complexity of care. The patients are getting sicker. We're having productivity expectations put on us by our employers or by our own practices. We have increasing regulatory burdens. That never ends. And the increased use of quality metrics such as patient satisfaction, which can really make us feel vulnerable. So who's burned out? Again, as I mentioned, urologists, unfortunately, are at the top of the heap in some specialties, but no specialty is immune. There's also some evidence that women are more at risk than men. So before we go any further, I just want to define exactly what we're talking about. What is physician burnout? Because again, we read about it in throwaway journals. We hear about it in our meetings. There are articles about it in peer-reviewed journals. So one definition of burnout is a long-term stress reaction marked by emotional exhaustion, depersonalization, and a lack of personal accomplishment, which sounds very sterile and vague. So I'm going to go on to define each of those quickly. So the three dimensions we just talked about, emotional exhaustion, depersonalization, and either a feeling of lack of personal accomplishments, also sometimes called negative self-appraisal. So what is emotional exhaustion? Well, it's a chronic state of physical and emotional depletion that results from excessive career or personal demands and continuous stress. And that continuous stress is very important. Another definition is a feeling of being emotionally overextended and exhausted by one's work. Next is depersonalization. And it's important to understand that a psychiatrist uses a different definition of depersonalization than the criteria for burnout. So the burnout definition of depersonalization, if you will, is, again, this is a quote, the action of divesting someone or something of human characteristics or individuality. In other words, it's a loss of empathy. So that's important. And in this case, we're talking about loss of empathy primarily to our patients, but also to our loved ones, to our coworkers. And finally, negative self-appraisal. That is exactly what it sounds like. It's a feeling of a lack of personal accomplishment, like I'm not doing what I should be doing. I'm no good. Everybody's better at me than this that I am. It's similar to what's called the imposter syndrome, which is very common among high-achieving individuals like surgeons. So how do we assess burnout? We've talked about what it is and why it's a problem. How do we assess it? There's really only one objectively measured inventory. It's called the Maslach Burnout Inventory. This is validated. It's based on over 35 years of research. And there is a specific physician's version of this. It focuses on those same three areas: emotional fatigue, depersonalization, and personal fulfillment. And whether you realize it or not, you've all taken the Maslach Positions Inventory, because for a few years now, this has been incorporated into the American Urological Association's annual physician census. Not the entire inventory, but parts of it. So whether you realize it or not, it's something we've all been asked. It's something that also comes up if you're in a residency program, if you're faculty in a residency program. These are questions that are also now baked into the annual program assessment, self-assessments. So that's how we objectively assess burnout. But how do we identify it? Well, the problem is we're not very good at admitting distress or asking for help or even recognizing when we need help. And burnout can lead to substance abuse, can lead to poor work performance, can lead to behavioral problems. And unfortunately, those are often the ways burnout gets identified. And as a result, a lot of the time, doctors wind up being referred for help due to these behavioral substance abuse or performance problems. One thing I point out when I give the lecture locally is every state has a physician's help program. We have one here in Missouri. It's based here in the St. Louis area. And, you know, you'll see pamphlets and flyers in your physician's lounge or wherever. And most of us look at those and go, oh, who'd ever need that? You know, that's for people with drug problems. That's not just what it's for. And you can self-refer to these programs if you yourself think you're having a problem. And it varies from state to state. But here, for example, if the physician self-refers, that information is confidential. That's not necessarily the case if you get referred by your hospital's medical staff administration. So those programs are out there and they're helpful. So what are some of the risk factors of winding up here? We talked about being a trainee, talked about work hours, work-home conflicts, lack of autonomy, which unfortunately is more and more a factor in many of our practices. People talk about paperwork burden these days, but really what we're talking about is EMRs more and more. And then, of course, there are personal factors like attitude. There's certainly some people who are more wired to have stress and problems just roll off their back like water off a duck. And some of us, when we're put under a lot of stress, we can go in a different direction, and that can lead to the symptoms of burnout. So I'm not going to get into the specifics of how to treat any associated problems, such as substance abuse, psychological problems, things like that, because it's way beyond the scope of what I want to talk about today. I want to talk about what's been looked at to help burnout in general. In going through this literature, one thing I noticed that most of the interventions you read about in papers focus on the individual, and that may not be the best approach, since a lot of the factors that contribute to physician burnout are institutional. A combination of both seems to work best, but overall, no specific technique has been shown to be better. I became interested in this topic when I eventually figured out that I was burned out. We had moved to a new city. I was starting a urology residency program, and I was the only pediatric urologist at a very busy tertiary children's hospital. And I was on call all the time for the first 2 years, even without residence. So I was taking intern call all the time. And we are trained to just put our heads down and run for the goal line. That's what we do. So when you're in it, you may not recognize it. And that's important. I want to reiterate it, that. I know I said that before. So once you recognize the problem, then if you're the one who's recognizing it, you have to figure out what to do to make it better. And for different people, it's going to be different things. It may be, God forbid, you know, it's a substance abuse problem. You may need to get help for that. Some people may benefit from seeing a therapist. Again, these are individual interventions. And we'll talk a little bit about institutional interventions as well. Some of the things that come up, which I found interesting: mindfulness training, meditation, techniques like that, stress management training. And a lot of the studies were very vague about what these are. These may be group stress management training programs, things like that. I like to read. And one thing that caught my attention in going through the literature is something that a lot of people find very helpful for warding off burnout is pleasure reading outside of the hospital. So I thought that was interesting. For other people, it may be working out. For other people, it may be running, going for a long bike ride. It's not going to be the same for everybody. But again, it's important to self-monitor, recognize the signs and symptoms, and either do something to help yourself or seek outside help. The kinds of institutional interventions we're talking about are exactly what you think about. attempts to reduce work hours, attempts to reduce workload. One example of that, which is particularly common in emergency rooms, is EMR scribes. So the physician isn't spending their entire shift pointing and clicking and typing. Increased physician autonomy is definitely helpful. I remember from Psych 101 in college, there was an experiment about stress, and they had two groups of rats. One group of rats would get an electric shock when a light went on. And if they hit a pedal, it would turn off the light and the shock. Another group of rats, it was random. Hitting the button didn't necessarily stop the shock. So those rats did not have autonomy, and they exhibited a much greater stress response than the rats that could turn off the shock. I realize we're not rats. That's not the best analogy in the world. I just mentioned that to really emphasize the point that perceived autonomy is very important. If you feel that you have no autonomy, then that is a major stressor that can lead to burnout. One last thing I want to talk about, though, is, again, some of my experiences. Burnout is insidious. You don't know you're burned out when you're there. And in my experience, you can't always count on your institution to recognize your burnout or to provide help. So again, we need to self-monitor and be aware, because ideally, if you're getting burned out, you want to take some intervention on your own before your institution feels like they have to step in, your university, your hospitals, medical staff, administration, your practice partners. And again, asking for help is very difficult, especially for surgeons. We're just not wired that way. We're not trained that way, but it's important. And something I haven't really read much about, but I learned in speaking to some therapists who specialize in these sorts of problems, is that even after your situation improves, you can still have symptoms that in many ways are similar to PTSD, post-traumatic stress disorder. Physician burnout is a trauma. It's not an acute trauma. In some ways, it's worse. It's a chronic ongoing trauma, a chronic stress. And you need to be aware of that, that if you've been through it and things are better, however you made it better, you'd still need to be vigilant that you may not quite be over the hill yet. To sum it up, this is a common problem, unfortunately, particularly common in urologists. We're not very good at recognizing it in ourselves and others as well. There are a myriad of individual and institutional interventions that can help. And we all need to really be mindful of what our internal state is. And we shouldn't be afraid to get help if we think we need it. Normally, at this point, I'd ask for questions. But since this is a reported podcast, we can't do that. So I just want to thank anybody who's listening to this.
Thank you for joining us this week on the PED Space. We hope you enjoyed Dr. Duell's perspective. Feel free to share with your colleagues while we deliver more pediatric urology-focused content in the coming weeks. There are some great resources for you and your patients at deflux.com. Additionally, you can learn more about our company and our products at palatelifesciences.com.